It's been 50 years since Arthur Ashe won Wimbledon. And to celebrate, at the beginning of each of our daily Wimbledon pods, we're teaming up with the Arthur Ashe Legacy at UCLA to share stories that bring that win to life. Enjoy the pod.
1975, he arrives to play Wimbledon and gets to the final. And he's playing Jimmy Connors. So as it happened, I ran across Donald Dell on the steps leading up to the old Players restaurant, which was on an upper level. There was a staircase halfway, a platform, and then another staircase. So I met him on the platform halfway up. He was going down, I was going up. And he said, and this was the day before the final, and he'd reached the final to play Jimmy Connors. And Donald said to me, he said, "Hey, John, do you think he's got a chance tomorrow?" I said, "Well, yes, I do, if he plays the right way." He said, "Yes, I do too." But I said, "Only though if he serves well. He's got to be serving well. And then I think the way to play is to play short to Jimmy's forehand, because he makes a lot of mistakes trying to dig up those low balls." And Donald said, "Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly what I've told him. And he's got to play the ball to his short to his forehand." And blow me, the next day, it's exactly what he did. He played a brilliant match. He did serve well, very well. And it was interesting to see Jimmy that day, because he kept, at the change of it, sitting down, reaching down to his sock and pulling out a note and started reading it. And then he'd fold it up and put it back in his sock and resume the match. And people said to him after, "What was that note about?" He said, "Oh, it's a note from my grandmother." So we never did discover what it said, but he was reading notes from his grandmother, presumably about wishing him luck or how to play. Who knows? It was a wonderful match. It really was. Thrilling. Mm-hmm. And Arthur conducted himself very well, kept his head in the crises, but he was too good.
Yeah. And after, you know, it was such a important match, I think, definitely for U.S. players.
Of course.
And definitely for black players.
Yes.
What do you think the impact of that win was?
Well, I suppose it opened the eyes of all players, particularly black players, to the possibilities in the world of tennis. If they were good enough, they could succeed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've seen many since doing just that. Mm-hmm. Right up until the present day, almost, the Williams sisters doing, you know, what they've done miraculously with the women's game. So, yes, it did. It was a turning point. Mm-hmm. It was a turning point.
Hello, guys, and welcome to day 6 at Wimbledon. It's just myself today, no Lucy, but I am joined by a special guest, friend of the pod, Tamani Carriol, The Guardian. How are you doing, Tamani?
Hello, I'm good, thank you, man.
that deep voice. You were like, "Oh, who the hell is this?"
That's why I'm never normally on podcast.
Stop it. No, I'm good, man. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah, it's been a long week, but you know, I've seen you guys grinding up until late hours.
Not as hard as you, man.
Yeah,
not as hard as you.
But yeah, it's been good. It's been good. I mean, obviously, so many upsets and it's been a bit crazy in that sense.
Do you want to talk about as well, actually, a bit? Because your main priority today was Iga Świątek, Daniel Collins.
Yeah.
Just quickly, how did that go? As expected?
Yeah, I mean, I think I thought Świątek would win, but she played it even better than I thought. Collins was pretty erratic, to be honest, and wasn't great, but Świątek was really solid, served really well. Just looks like a lot more confident on grass. I think, like it's funny, obviously, she, you know, you want to win the French Open every year, but you know, after when she'd win the French Open, she'd go home to Poland for a few days, and then it was like she was catching up on grass, you know. Whereas after, I mean, she only lost in the semi-final like two days before the final, but, you know, she was still a bit more fresh. So she went and, you know, practiced and like went straight to the grass and like had extra time. So now she's just feeling comfortable.
It was Bad Ongberg she played, lost in the
final. To Pegula. So yeah, she's doing well, and that's a pretty open bottom half. So we'll see.
6-2, 6-3 in the end.
Yeah.
It was funny because obviously yesterday we were concentrating on the top half, and it was Madison Keys was the sixth seed, and she fell obviously to Laura Sigelmund, and that left Irina Sabalenka being the only remaining top 10 seed in the top half, which is just is crazy going into the second week. Don't know what's the shape in the bottom half. Like, there's a few more.
I mean, the main ones are Świątek, obviously. In the third section of the draw, Andreeva, obviously.
Andreeva, of course. Yeah.
And I guess Anisimova's kind of obviously in form, and I mean, I think she's very close to being a top 10 player.
It's kind of my pick, you know. And I say my pick, or one of.
Yeah, I mean, Tatiana Maria is no longer in the draw, so.
But no, let's get into, obviously, this is Black Spin Global, as you know. So we do focus on the black players, but our first match was the first match on number one court, which was Hayley Baptiste versus Mira Andreeva. Mira Andreeva being the seventh seed. Very talented Russian teenager. It was my first time watching her in person. I was very impressed by what I saw. But also, for me, Andreeva did win 6-1, 6-3, but I've said here in my notes, like, it didn't really feel like a 6-1, 6-3 match. Just because I don't feel like Baptiste was outplayed as such, as the score would suggest. She did start nervy, she got broken first game, the very first service game, but she kind of settled into it as the set went on. I think at 3-1 she had a breakpoint opportunity that she didn't convert, but if she did, that would have made it 3-2, possibly get back on serve. But she was unable to do that, and then she ended up losing the first set 6-1, but she got better in the second set. It was a much more closer affair. And if Lucy was here, she'd be going on about Baptiste's serve. She said, coming in, Baptiste needs to basically tighten up on her serve, first and second serve, which I think is obviously a fair point, but I think Baptiste she should be pretty pleased with her overall performance. I think in terms of just how she played and kind of carried herself. Also, this would have been her first time playing on number one court. And I feel that's also quite significant for players that are kind of just at the beginning of their careers, playing one of the major show courts, at a Grand Slam.
It's different.
Exactly. Do you want to talk a bit about just Baptiste's game? I know you weren't probably paying too much attention to it because obviously you were elsewhere, but.
Yeah, yeah. Well, on that, first of all, just getting used to the court, bigger courts, obviously big crowd, people cheering, even just the kind of optics of, you know, the court being wider, every court's the same, length and width and everything, and same dimensions. But it can play tricks on you when you're on those big courts, and it feels massive. I mean, in general, it's just been impressive, and just to see Baptiste just developing as a player, and following up French Open fourth round with a third round here is massive. Obviously,
on singles debut as well.
Yeah. Mm. And particularly given that obviously different surfaces. But I mean, I feel like her game's kind of in a way made for the natural surfaces in a way, because with her variety and with just the way she can improvise and all of that stuff. And she just has for me, she has a lot of great kind of abilities and just in terms of her serve and how big it can be. Forehand's obviously massive and can generate a lot of heavy topspin, has the feel, the hands, and really it's just about kind of bringing everything together. And she's doing that, gradually and doing well. Her wins in this tournament were good. The Mboko win was, impressive. Had an opportunity and she took it and did really well in that match. The first set tie break.
Exactly.
So, yeah, a good tournament. I mean, in the end, Andreeva's just tough, man. She's so, like, for me, she's so good now, particularly, like, with her serve. Just the fact that this year she's kind of upped her weight level in a way, you know? Like, she's banging out, I think, when it was just easily up to, like, 190 miles an hour and, you know, hitting her spots at times. So it's just, when you put that together with, like, her kind of, you know, crafty game, like, her kind of her intelligence on the court, is tough, so.
Because that's something I was impressed by in terms of Andreeva. Like, she's very complete already, and she's only 18.
Yeah.
And obviously she's going to improve, but it's like, damn, it's quite scary to think how good she could actually be considering she's this good already. So, yeah, like, very, very exciting prospect there. But yeah, on Baptiste, I think everything you said is spot on. Like, I love her variety in terms of she can mix it up and she's not afraid to kind of, like, basically throw in a slice here or there, or like come into the net. She's good at the net as well. Very competent in the net.
Yeah.
And she does play doubles. She plays a lot of doubles. And I think that obviously does help. I think she was playing doubles here with Cassie McNally. I think they lost first round, but yeah, very, very, like, it's a solid showing for Baptiste. And like you said, coming
off. This is a media announcement. Novak Djokovic is on his way to the media theatre. He will then be followed by Ben Shelton. But Novak Djokovic will be first in the media theatre, and he's on his way.
You guys heard that. So obviously we'll be stopping and then, yeah, going to Ben's press after Novak. But yeah, I feel hopefully Hayley is, like, in good spirits. Obviously she lost today, but I think overall it's been a pretty good Wimbledon considering, like I said, this was her singles main draw debut. And she, like you said, backed up the French Open fourth round run from last month. So yeah, she's in a good place. And I'm looking forward to seeing her during the US hardcourt swing, obviously being back home in the States as well. Like, it's going to be a lot more eyes on her too. And she's knocking on the door of, like, the top 50. I think she's just outside the top 50 at the moment. So, yeah, I've no doubt she'll be inside the top 50. She'll probably be inside the top 50 after Wimbledon, actually, after this run. But yeah, her ranking's only going to keep going up and up and up. But shouts out to Andreeva, definitely. And she's one to look out for, like, in the draw.
Sure.
I don't know who she's playing next, which I should, which is quite bad on my part. But let me...
Are you taking it match by match? You know?
The players. Exactly. Thank you. Exactly.
Emma Navarro.
Emma Navarro. Wow. Who beat Bobo Kachikova.
Yeah. Took out the defending champ.
That was really weird. Did you see any of that?
No. I was watching Świątek.
Of course. Because, yeah, Kachikova won the first set. Looked pretty comfortable. And then she had the trainer come out. I don't know what the issue was. And then in the third, she was, like, in tears. Like, she just looked really distressed.
Yeah.
I don't know what the issue was. I know she didn't do press afterwards.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, like you said, that's the defending champ gone. And, like, obviously Navarro was the higher seed, though. So, like, she was expected on paper to win that. But it's still a bit of a surprise, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, just the way it developed, yeah. But yeah. I did kind of think, I think expectations were really low for Krejcikova coming into the tournament, given she'd barely played, and, like, she got through two rounds, which is... just her surviving the first round was, like... I think a lot of people thought she'd lose. Who did she play? She played Ayala in the first round.
So. Cool, and that was a three-setter as well, wasn't it? Was it a three-setter?
Yeah, I can't... Yeah, something, yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, it was, yeah, yeah, you're right. That'll be a tough one. I'd go back and Andreeva to beat
Navarro. Same. How far do you think she can go,
Andreeva?
Yeah,
I mean, I think she's a title contender for sure.
Yeah.
In that, yeah.
Would you have said that before
the tournament?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, her grass results weren't great, but still, like, she's just... I rate her really highly. I think she's, yeah, just, as you said, she's a very complete player.
Mm.
And she seems to be, I don't know, I think she French Open was tough, the Boisson match, but I think she'll take that and want to, you know, bring even more kind of impetus to go further in the tournament. But yes, it was wide open, right? It's, you know, it's not, like, there's no clear,
direct.
I could see any, you know, particularly out of those three, her, Świątek, or Anisimova, making the final.
Sabalenka.
Like, what do I think?
In terms of, yeah.
I mean, I think she'll make the final. I think that was a good sign, the Raducanu match. The fact that, you know, the crowd was against her. Raducanu was playing great.
Were you covering that?
Yeah.
Talk a bit about that, actually, because, yeah, that was that was tough.
Crazy match. Just the atmosphere. That's the loudest I've heard it since since Serena, Heather Watson.
Oh, damn.
Throwing
it back.
Because
it was the roof closed.
So it just amplified.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, in that match, like, I thought Raducanu played very well, especially like first like three quarters of the match, and Sabalenka had to just raise her level and kind of match it, and like crazy enter the tiebreak when Raducanu had a set point. Sabalenka hits a drop shot, like out of nowhere, backhand drop shot winner, and then finishes the tiebreak at the net with a drop volley. You know, like, she just didn't have that in her game like a couple of years ago.
She's another one though. She played a lot of doubles back
But it's been crazy to see how her game's evolved, you know, and how she can, you know, she just has other things she can draw upon. So yeah, that was the, and also the fact that obviously we like, a great memory for, you know, for you guys, like, her against Coco US Open, but the fact that, you know, the crowd was against her there, and she lost her head.
Because that's what I thought going into this one with Raducanu. I thought, you know what, the crowd are clearly going to be on Raducanu's side, so that's going to work in her favour.
Yeah.
And we all know Sabalenka doesn't like, she doesn't like when the crowd are like so against her, in terms of like they're not for you.
Yeah.
And to Raducanu's like credit, she did build up a lead in the second set.
Yeah, she was up 4-1, had a break point for 5-1, missed the forehand, and then lost five games in a row, so... Yeah.
Like, what do you think happened there? Like, do you think she kind of, I don't know, like the moment got to her?
I think a bit. I think after she missed that opportunity, like the moment got to her a bit. There were a couple of tight games after that, and Sabalenka just did what she does, right? And just flipped the momentum. And as soon as it was gone, like, that was it. And again, Sabalenka's just too good. Like, and her ability to just like raise her level in those big moments.
That's why she's world number one. We do say that a lot. Lucy does credit Sabalenka for kind of, owning the title as the world number one, because she wears the crown well. Like, she performs as a world number one, basically. But no, a tough one for Raducanu. But again, fair play. Like, she played pretty well. Amount of pressure she's under, like, in this country, it's a joke. In terms of like the media, basically. So for her to perform the way she did, of course, she didn't get the win. But she put in a good effort and gave a good account of herself.
Very, very, very. I have to say, like, very so mad. Like, just before her match, Cam Nori getting asked by the judge if he's dating her. Ridiculous.
You didn't know that. You don't know the journalist.
I didn't know who it was. I know it's like a tabloid.
I was gonna say, definitely
news journalist. Yeah. Like, not like, because that was the thing. I saw like a couple of people posted it.
Okay.
And people were.
It's been
like,
doing rounds on social.
People like, tennis media.
Stop
like,
it.
Like, I have my own, like, you know, criticisms of tennis media and some of the questions they ask. But,
listen, you are the darling of the tennis media. Like, every player, like, loves Tamani. Like, let's just be real. He's gonna downplay it. I mean, you've probably seen the pictures, guys. He was literally in the box. Was it the box or the balcony at Queens?
Oh God, yeah, God.
Smooching. No, I'm joking. It wasn't smooching, but like, he was like. Very close to Omar Raducanu. Like, you guys, I'm not saying you're dating. I'm not saying that. Jack Draper as well, that's your boy. Like, we joke about that. But it's, players have love for you, and rightly so. You are not, you're in your own league, Tamani, when it comes to these tennis journalists.
How did we get onto this? Anyway, let's move on. What I meant is just that it's not a person who ever covers tennis or sports in general. Yeah. I think it's, you know, someone who's normally doing gossipy stuff, and that's what
try to like preface it a bit by saying, oh, like, we're trying to clear up.
Yeah, he's trying to be funny, but it was not funny. It was not, you know, what are you doing? What, like, this is, you know, beef. Like, you can joke around with them, but be like I don't know.
And just, Cam Nori is not the kind of guy as well that I think you could like do that or joke with.
But I mean, it was a terrible, like, I mean, even just the idea was ridiculous. It's stupid. The obsession with her, you know, her love life is just it's pathetic, it's embarrassing. It's that was shameful in my opinion. To bring it back to Blackspin, it did remind me, like, in terms of like joking, part of why, like, when I'm interacting with players and stuff, I want them to know who I am get to a point where they respect me, and then I can joke.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's important to kind of have that. And to bring it back to that, like the Ben Shelton thing in Australia, when you had all these people, like, you know, trying to crack jokes, and you know, there was the whole Monfils thing with is he your dad kind of thing.
Embarrassing.
And I mean, again, like that's also a terrible thing in any context, but like in general, like you know, it's weird for them when you just some random stranger is trying to joke with you.
Yeah.
Like. So yeah, it was terrible on several levels. So.
No, that's well said, man. I completely agree, and I'm sure everybody's seen that as well, like on the socials, because it's been doing the rounds. So yeah, but back to our action today. So Ben Shelton, he was the third match on number one after Swiatek.
Yes. He was. He was after Krejcikova, I think. Well, he was, Swiatek was on center.
Oh, my bad. Okay, yeah. So, I got that confused. So Ben Shelton, Martin Fucsovics, they were the last match on number one court. And that was a 6-3, 7-6, 6-2 victory for Shelton, the temp seed, yet to drop a set this tournament, which is a complete reverse of last year. He played what? At this point, 15 sets, because he literally won every match in five sets.
Yeah,
on route to the fourth round last year, but this year the complete opposite: straight sets of victories in all three of his opening round matches, or all three of his matches so far. I thought he looked very comfortable, like from the beginning. I thought the match was pretty much on his racket, like from the first ball. Fucsovics did take a medical timeout at 2-1 in the first set. And I wasn't able to see, like, I didn't really see anything wrong, like, with him. Mm. He didn't look particularly, like, I don't know, hampered or injured. Came out and he did get broken, actually, after that game.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it was, exactly. And then Shelton just, obviously, he's got the massive serve, like, I guess punished him and took that set 6-3. Second set was a lot more tighter, did go to a tiebreak. But even then, I was like, I still feel like Shelton is the one, like, in control.
Yeah. He served unbelievable in that tiebreak. I think he missed no more than one first serve in the whole tiebreak.
I love that insight.
Maybe two, I don't know. But like, it was like, he was just banging down first serves and putting pressure on Fucsovics, and, you know, big, serve plus one with the forehand, so... It was really clean, really, really, really sharp, really on.
Because Fucsovics he's a big hitter himself. And like, I thought, this is also quite a nice matchup in terms of like just two big hitters going at it. Shelton was just pretty much in control. Like he didn't look at all kind of under any pressure or, and that's no slight on Fucsovics. Fucsovics was a lucky loser. Like, so for him to reach the third round, like, pretty good going. Took out Gael Monfils round before, and that was a five-set epic. Obviously, that had to be played over 2 days because of the whole bad light thing. Very similar situation, because Shelton Hitchikata, that also had to be played over 2 days due to bad light. But again, Shelton won that in straight sets. Fucsovics won his second round in five. You're laughing.
So I'm just laughing. I was thinking of Shelton's press conference after the one-minute restart.
I wasn't in there, but Lucy was.
It was just funny, like, kind of him and other people joking about the 70 seconds, and he was like...
Was it 70 or 71?
70, I don't know.
You said 71.
Depends on the stop. Depends on if you're counting when the start of the service motion of the ball to us. But it's funny. Someone asked him, like, about whether he'd, like, go back to hit. Because he'd only been on court for that such a short time, and he was like, I've been on court, like, I had a half an hour hit, so been on court for 30 minutes and 70 seconds. That's such a funny and weird, like, situation.
He's got a really good, like, sense of humor as well, and just personality in general, Shelton. Like, he, there's just something, I think it's like an American way as well, but there's also, he is quite unique in that I just find him very engaging, and like, he's quite easy to like interact with, and like, he seems to have like a good relationship with pretty much everybody. Like,
yeah, he's cool. Yeah.
He's good peoples. But yeah, this his next opponent is going to be interesting. So we haven't been to his press yet. So don't worry, we will include a snippet from his press conference. But just on his next opponent, it's going to be Lorenzo Sonego, the Italian, in the fourth round. And this is going to be the third Grand Slam in a row that they've met. So they met in Australia in the quarterfinals. I think that was a four-set victory for Shelton. And then in Paris at the French Open, and that was a first round match, and that was a five-setter that Shelton ended up winning. So kind of crazy that they're playing for the third major in a row. I think it's 4-1 currently in the head-to-head to Shelton. It's going to be, the way Shelton's playing, I think, Tamani, I think it's going to be a tall order, like, for Sonego to win that.
Yeah.
And he came through a five-setter.
Yeah, I was watching it. Five-setter against Nakashima.
A seeded player. Nakashima was seeded, isn't he?
Yeah.
So.
But it was like particularly in the final set tiebreak.
Which is 10 points.
Yeah, 10 points. Mm. So you're very, very serve-dominated. A couple of tiebreaks in it. And Sonego just kind of guided it out at the end and played a much better tiebreak. But yeah, like watching Shelton and just seeing how well he's playing and how comfortable he looks. He's definitely the favorite, and definitely I'd back him to win that for sure.
Have you seen much of him in terms of, well, this tournament and Shelton, like first round, second round today?
Yeah, just like bits, you know.
But obviously your priority is the British players, like obviously.
Yeah. And I mean, in general, like I feel like, yeah, unless I'm covering a match, I'm kind of watching bits here and there because there's so much going on. But yeah, he looks comfortable. He looks, you know, serving really well. It looks like he's being really aggressive behind his forehand at the moment, hitting it really big. I think I said that when we were watching today. Like, yeah, he's just playing freely, using his slice well as well on the grass, which is nice.
Again, another one with a lot of variety. Like he's trying to, but he's not trying to. He is implementing that into his game, which is good to see. But yeah, the serve is scary. Like, I think it was down 15-40 in one of the games in the second set, I think it was, just threw down like a 148 ace. I was like, it's just, you can't do anything about that. Yeah. Like, and he's got it in his locker. Like when he needs it, he just pulls it out. He did have a wobble actually, serving it out at 5-1. Fucsovics broke him, but then at 5-2, he then broke Fucsovics back to win the match on, am I saying his name right? Fucsovics. Or was it Fucsovics?
I say Fucsovics.
Fucsovics.
I mean, yeah.
Well, you're bilingual. You bilinguals, man. Like, showing off. But good guy. Very, very good win for Shelton. And I feel like, he's in a good place at the moment. I'm looking forward to the Sonego match. As well, you guys will be aware, like, Shelton is literally the only player we have left now in terms of men's and women's singles draws. So all our money and like hopes and expectations are on Ben 10. So no pressure, Ben. We look forward to going to his press. I think he's going to be in good spirits, obviously coming off the back of another straight sets win and into the second week at Wimbledon for the second time or second year in a row. So all good. So yeah, we're going to cut here then.
You're smart.
So yeah, guys, we're back from Ben Shelton's press conference. Always speaks well, Ben. Like, he's always good value, I think, in his press conferences. Always gives like really good answers. But there was a funny moment. We'll get to the question we Tamani asked, and then another one I also want to talk about. But there was a funny moment in that presser, Tamani, which we're still laughing about now. Forgot the name of the journo, apologies.
Howard Fendrich,
Associated Press, asked Ben about basically his family kind of, you know, being around and like how that makes him feel. And like, yeah, he even mentioned names or tried to mention names. If you wanna, explain.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, just he mentioned Ben's, you know, family. Sorry,
Tamani's busting up.
It was funny. Like, how was great journalist. You know, really good. But he just makes that Ben's girlfriend's name, Trinity Rodman. He called her Tiffany, and then Ben was like, so I think Ben was like, it's Trinity, but Howard didn't hear her, and then
first Ben said, oh, who's Tiffany?
Oh yeah, yeah.
and then Howard was like, oh, you tell me.
Yeah, like how. And, but at some point he said it's Trinity, but he Howard didn't hear.
Yeah, Ben did say it's Trinity. Yeah. Yeah.
But then Howard thought Ben was just like joking. It was like, you know.
Yeah.
And so in the end, it was like they're both just like silent teenagers. and then Eugene came in and saved the day and said it's Trinity, and then Ben like laughed, and then, you know, then he was like, it's all right, it's cool. And I should note, she was sitting there watching. Corner,
exactly. She was busting up as well. She was laughing her head off. Very, very funny.
And then he was, we just saw him back, and he was laughing about it. It was just funny moment.
It was. But I loved your question about him using the slice a lot. Like, because obviously that's something you've obviously seen. And yeah, this is what Ben had to say about that.
Yeah. When I was young, I used it a lot because my backhand was terrible. So, you know, that was kind of my way to get out of hitting backhands, run around and hit the forehand and slice the backhand. But for me, I'm learning to use it as an offensive shot, to play it short sometimes, bring guys forward, especially on this surface. It's tough to move forward fast. It's a shot that can kind of change the rhythm. A lot of guys, when you're hitting topspin balls, no matter how quality, it can come back with interest. Guys play really well off of hard topspin shots. My backhand's a little bit flatter, stays low in the zone. And so if a guy's hitting that really, really well, try to mix it up, move it around the court. And I've stopped using it as much when I'm on the move defensively, just because guys can kind of come to net and pick that ball off, easy volley plays. So I've worked a lot on my open stance backhand and being able to stretch how far I can get out there and still hit the ball with two hands. And that's kind of been a really important shot for me to steal some points where guys are in control and kind of flip it.
How much, like, working on your open stance backhand, I guess, what does that look like, and how much is that about technique versus also trusting when you're in the corners that, you know, you can get a pull back deep?
Yeah, it's just reps. You got to have a million of them so you feel confident at that point. You know, it's athletic ability, it's footwork, being able to move through the shot, and then execution in the match just comes with practice. So for me, I'm getting more and more comfortable. Sometimes I revert back to going, hitting that slice on the move on balls that I could have got with two hands, and it cost me. So it's something I continuously work on, whether it's feeding drills or live ball drills in practice before the tournament or training blocks. It's just a point of emphasis.
Yeah. So why did you what made you ask that question, basically?
I mean, just watching him today, and I mean, he uses the slice a lot, but he used it well today, and he hit like one in the, I don't know, just one that stuck in my mind was in the tie break. I think it was like when he got the mini break, you know?
Yeah.
And it was like really low and short. And sometimes he definitely doesn't use it well. I think it's because, like, as he said, it's like a, he used it in the past, used it to avoid his back end. And occasionally, I guess, when he's probably not feeling confident with his back end, he'll go to the slice. But yeah, I think he's using it well on the grass, and obviously with it bouncing low. And
it's very effective.
Particularly when you, like, you know, compared to like his forehand, for example, when he can, you know, he can whip that up and generate topspin. So it just makes it adds a different look for opponents. So
No, a really, really good answer. A great question. I also liked what he said about, there was a question asked about like technical minds, like on tour, and the two players he mentioned, two Americans, so Taylor Fritz, who I think is also, a great mind, and Francis Tiafoe, which a lot of people don't give Tiafoe credit for. And he even said that too. I'd love to include it, but I don't think we have time. But just to like kind of paraphrase what he just said, obviously Fritz kind of talks his way through matches. Like, he doesn't receive on-court coaching. If anything, he's like kind of talking, talking to his team about the way points have gone. And like he said, he's very objective as well. Like when he comes off court, like he knows why he's lost the match if he has lost. And with TFO, it's very much the same. He said TFO is such a quick thinker, which again, like, he doesn't get enough credit for. Like,
And he said,
oh yeah, people see TFO laughing and joking. He's like, yeah, nah, he's got a great like tennis IQ. So shouts out to Ben for like acknowledging that. Also, you mentioned Roger Federer.
But I should know, so the origins was actually, so I asked Fritz about his return stance, because he was playing Mpeshi and Diallo. And when he was returning, he was massive servers, but he was standing in like really close to the baseline and just chipping forehands. Like the whole time he was just chipping his forehand. But also like, I mean, it was mad just how close he was standing to return like 153 miles an hour.
Brave.
So I asked him about that, and he gave a crazy detailed answer. So then this other journalist kind of in the next press conference asked him just about like, you know, about kind of how he sees tennis and who tennis minds. And Fritz also mentioned TFO. He mentioned TFO and Kyrgios.
So
TFO's got a lot of, and I mean, you can see that just the way he talks about tennis. Yeah. And like he's, you know, I mean, just like Ben said, like, you know, not just the jokey thing, but just in general, he gives us like being quite nonchalant and, you know, whatever, but he's proper in the weeds in tennis, you know, and he's watching, and you know, he's great at like, I think, judging and understanding how things play, you know, what's happening on the court, basically.
I think it's really significant as well, coming from like your peers. For me, that holds a lot of weight. Like, so I'm very happy to hear that, because yeah, that's not something that's like kind of associated with TFO.
Of course.
Like, so.
No, I was just gonna say, and you know, also with black athletes.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you. Exactly. You have to go there. It's all
PMP.
Power.
Pace and power.
This is exactly, no, facts. We laugh, but this is for real. Yeah. And this isn't just this is across all sports.
Yeah.
Like, it's the same kind of brush black athletes get painted with. Oh, they're just, you know, physically fantastic and like superhuman. Whereas their mind doesn't really get any kind of credit, or because it on I say paper, traditionally that is not something that black athletes are known for, which is absolute nonsense.
Yeah. I mean, idiots still think Serena won 20, however many, 22, 23, I can't even remember. It's been
in the 20s.
Yeah, the 23 slams by just hitting the ball hard and nothing else. Like, ridiculous. Like she wasn't, you know, a kind of genius problem solver on the court. Like she wasn't incredibly smart. So yeah.
Insane.
And when even she's painted, you know, when even people don't give her that credit, then what chance does Francis have in terms of people like understanding?
No, for real. Exactly.
What they put on court.
True. But yeah, guys, man, that wraps up day 6. Also, we must mention, so obviously you would have heard our thrash oral history at the beginning of the show. And today is actually the 50th anniversary of Arthur Ashe winning Wimbledon. So there's been a lot of stuff you've probably been seeing on like social media. I think Wimbledon posted some stuff on their socials. I've seen some stuff on the ESPN as well, Tennis Channel. But yeah, today literally was the day that Arthur Ashe won Wimbledon 50 years ago. So massive shout out to the great man. Another great mind. Like,
And so, particularly, I mean, as I'm sure you've covered, like, that was obviously kind of legendary win.
Of course.
In the way he won it. Exactly. You know, and the intelligence on court and the strategy. So,
exactly. Yeah. Do you want to talk? Because we haven't actually had you on for a minute. Like, in terms of Arthur Ashe, what kind of memory? Obviously, you weren't alive.
I ain't got no memory.
Obviously, you weren't alive when he was playing. But yeah, when the name Arthur Ashe is like brought up, like what kind of, I don't know, visions or... What is that? All emotions. What emotions are like evoked for you from the name Arthur Ashe?
I mean, it's just legendary, isn't it? Just the way he blazed the trail on the court, but also, you know, just off the court as well. Just the respect he built, and you know, the kind of all the causes he backed, philanthropy, everything. I don't know, just kind of. Yeah, just a legendary figure and someone who just paved the way for, I mean, everyone, but also for black tennis players going forward, you know, so.
I love the fact that like his name obviously lives on, but when you think US Open, it's Arthur Ashe. Like,
yeah,
for me, that's huge.
Yeah.
And like some people only know the name because of that stadium, and that's fair, because they'll have to go back and, you know, see, oh, who is Arthur Ashe, and that will make them, you know, look up and check the history basically.
Yeah.
And see like what a great man he was. So yeah, so powerful. A massive shout out to Arthur Ashe again, and I love what we're doing in terms of like highlighting, you know, his legacy and kind of remembering the name, which we'll be doing throughout Wimbledon. So yeah, guys, that wraps up day six. We won't be, there won't be a day seven pod because obviously we'll be having our live show on day seven. So hopefully we'll see you, or our London listeners anyway, or UK listeners even, at Box Park, Play Box at Box Park in Croydon. For day seven, the schedule has been released, so go on to our socials and you'll see that we'll have a special giveaway as well, thanks to Christopher Eubanks providing us with one of his rackets. Actually,
I'm his delivery man.
I was gonna say the guy that actually Tamani was like the middleman in terms of giving us the package.
The every guy.
So yeah, but team effort over here. But yeah, guys, we're looking forward to that tomorrow. So hopefully we'll see you all there.
I was just gonna say, I still don't know how he found me. And
stop it.
I need to ask him like how he found me, like to give me the rackets.
Because you know? I was texting him saying, oh, I'm gonna message you back, but I'm gonna see if my boy Tamani is around so he can collect them from you. 2 minutes later, Chris texts you back saying, oh, is it this guy? With the you know the selfie that you took. I was like, what? Like, that's crazy. So, but yeah, how did he find you?
I don't know. I was on the broadcast center watching down on court 18.
Okay.
And he just comes up to me and he's like, hey, Tamani, how you doing? I'm like, I'm not even in like a spot. It's not like I was at my desk, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a random spot that I wouldn't normally be at.
That's wild. That is wild. Well, I mean, yeah, you're clearly well known like in this thing, Tamani. You need to give yourself some more credit. Yeah. But no, thank you for joining me today, man. You saved the day, because in Lucy's absence, I would have been lost. So I appreciate you.
No worries.
And yeah, guys,
I'll be back soon.
Definitely will be. Until next time.